When I was in college, I belonged to a fraternity, a social fraternity called Tau Kappa Epsilon. I was a TEK, TKE were our letters. Every fall, the fraternities on my campus, there were six of them, would hold a rush week where we would go out looking for prospective new members, mostly from among the incoming freshmen. And for that rush week, on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in the evenings, freshmen who wanted to learn about fraternities, about whether or not they wanted to join a fraternity, would visit two of the fraternities each night so that all six of them got visited. And then on Thursday night, the prospective new members would choose two fraternities that they wanted to revisit, and that would be the night of our hard sell when we would try to get them to want to join our fraternity. Now, the way it worked was, on that Thursday night, we would take our cars up to the freshman dorm, and we would pick up the guys who had signed up to come down to our house for the night. I went up to pick up guys one night during rush week. I walked into the lounge in the freshman dorm, and there was about 30, 40 guys hovering around in there waiting for the other rides to show up. And over in the corner was this guy, Sam. He was sitting in a chair over in the corner. I knew Sam. He was a football player. About half of my fraternity brothers were football players, so they'd been on campus since early August for training camp, and I'd met Sam several times. And I see him, and I said, "Hey, Sam, how you doing?" I went over to talk to him, and we're getting our list together of who's going to be coming down to the house. And I said, "Sam, are you coming down tonight?" He kind of got this sheepish look in his face. He said, "No." He said, "I'm going to go to the ATO house and the Lambda Chi house." And that was Alpha Tau Omega and Lambda Chi Alpha were two of the other fraternities on campus. The ATO house I knew pretty well. There's a lot of football players in that house too. And we were friends with them. We got along pretty well. But the Lambda Chi's, now that was a different story. See, they were our mortal enemies, right? They were our foils. They were our rivals, if you will. But I smiled when Sam told me that. And I said, "You know, Sam, those are both good houses. You know, they've got some good guys in both of them. I hope you find what you're looking for tonight. You know, good luck." And we talked for a couple more minutes just about how classes were going and football practice. And they had a game coming up that weekend. So I turned around and started gathering up the guys I needed to take. Now, in college, one of the reasons I got to go pick up prospective freshmen is I drove a 74 Chevy Impala four-door, which would seat about 13 people. You know, if we weren't touching. So I start gathering up guys to throw in my car and say, "We're going to head down to the house." As I'm gathering up, I turn around, and Sam is now standing right behind me. He says, "Hey, do you got room for one more?" I said, "Well, sure, Sam, come along." So I didn't ask any questions. Sam came, got in the car, and went down. He heard our hard sell that night on why you'd want to be a TEK. I don't remember what we told him. I would imagine it had something, you know, Ronald Reagan was a TEK. That was probably what we led with, you know, be a TEK like Ron, you know. But Sam did decide to join our fraternity, and he was with it for the next several years. I've been friends with Sam now for over 25 years. And a few months after that night, he told me, he said, "You want to know why I came down to the house and joined TEK?" He goes, "You know, I hadn't signed up to come down." And I said, "Yeah, what changed your mind?" He said, "Well, when I told you that I was going to go to a different fraternity," he said, "you didn't change the way you were talking to me." He said, you didn't treat me any different after I told you that than before I told you that. He said, "You were the same guy to me when you found out that I hadn't chosen you." He said, "And I was just," he goes, "I thought that was pretty amazing." He goes, "I thought to myself, you know, that's the kind of guy I'd want to be around." We like drawing lines, dividing our world up. We notice differences, and we use them to separate ourselves into us's and them's. It's perfectly natural. We're drawn to sameness. We're, in many ways, repelled by differences. It's a survival instinct. We want to be with our herd. Very rarely does the antelope stray over and eat with the lions. So we notice things, little things, subtle things, that weed out who is like us and who is different. Maybe it's attitude or politics or choices or priorities, just general presence. We notice the things that make us different, and we use them to draw a line between people like us and the others, the thems, the not us's. Let me tell you where it often happens for me, where I tend to get culled from the herd. I am, as the children pointed out this morning, I am a guy. I'm a big, hairy guy. Because of that, I don't have to try too hard to put forth an air of masculinity. I'm large and furry. It just kind of comes. Because of that, by my very presence, it looks like I should know about two things: sports and cars. Now, I can fake my way through sports, right? For instance, I don't watch every game the Royals play. Shocker, I know. There's 162 of them. I'll pick up the important ones, don't worry. But I can fake my way through a conversation. I know enough names, enough terms, enough questions to ask. I can make it through a conversation, even with the most ardent Royals fan. But when it comes to cars, well, that's my Achilles heel. You see, I don't know a thing about cars. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really care to know a thing about cars. As long as it runs and gets me where I need to go, I'm pretty satisfied with my relationship with the automobile to that point. If it starts making noises or doing something funny, I'll take it to a car guy and I'll say, it's going bump, bump, bump. And they'll fix that. But here's what happens. Every once in a while, I will out myself by mistake. In a group of other big hairy males, I'll notice a car and I'll make the mistake of making a comment like, hey, that's a nice car. At which point, inevitably, one of the other large hairy males in the group will turn to me and launch into a diatribe about how, well, yeah, it's a 72 Ford Thunderbird with a 460 engine, 7.5 liter V8, 7,500 cc's with 342 pounds of torque and 224 horses under the hood. I just meant that it was blue. And just like that, I am separated from the group. I am different. I don't have the same likes, the same dislikes, the same knowledge, the same experience base. And just like that, a little wall comes up, separating us who don't know a thing about cars from them that do. We do the same thing in church. We divide and conquer. There are us's and there are them's. Us Christians and them others. Us Protestants and them Catholics. Us disciples and them Baptists and them Methodists and them Episcopalians and them Lutherans and them Baptists some more. Us liberal disciples and them conservative disciples. Us conservative disciples and them liberal disciples. Us old disciples and them new disciples. Us them. Lines drawn, divisions made, separations created. Why? Why do we do that? So we're with our own. So we are where we are comfortable and unchallenged. So we don't have to worry about disagreement and dissension and discord. We draw our lines and we draw them to keep others away, to keep others out, and we justify it with scriptures and teaching. We assure ourselves we are the ones in the right. We are the righteous. We are the ones that have all the answers, the ones that have it figured out. The others, the thems, they have it all wrong, or at least some of it wrong, or at least one thing wrong that we noticed, and that is enough for us to draw distinctions. It's been that way since the beginning. Peter comes into Jerusalem where he meets with other Jewish Christians. The early church, most of the Christians had been Jews first and converted to the teachings of Jesus. Because they had been Jews first, they were circumcised. Jesus, who was a Jew, had been circumcised. So they believed that if you were going to be a follower of Jesus, you have to be like Jesus. You should be circumcised, even if you were not a Jew. And they start to hear stories coming in from Caesarea and from Joppa where Gentiles are converting, but they're not getting circumcised. They're not doing it right. So Peter comes into Jerusalem and they say, hey, we heard that you're eating with people that aren't circumcised. I'm not sure exactly how you're supposed to check that at the dinner table. I don't think I want to go to the restaurant where I have to prove that particular point before I can order. But that's what they get on. They don't even get on Peter for teaching and preaching the good news to Gentiles. They just get on him for hanging out with them. You were eating dinner with them. They're not like us. They're different. And Peter says, yeah, they are. But see, I had a dream. In this dream, God spoke to me. God put down this banquet meal. It was this huge picnic full of all kinds of animals and birds of the air. And, you know, there was stuff on it we don't normally eat, right? Because of Leviticus, right? There's rules. There's things we don't eat. And the voice in my dream said, Peter, you're hungry. You should eat something. Kill it and eat it. And I said, no, I can't, because my lips have never touched anything that is not pure. The voice called out to me, how can you make profane what God has created? He then sends Peter to the Gentiles in that dream with the admonition, the Spirit told me to go to them and not to make a distinction between them and us. And as I began to speak, the Holy Spirit fell upon them just as it had on us in the beginning. If God gave them the same gift that he gave us when we believed, who was I that I could hinder God? The Spirit told me not to make a distinction between them and us. We are doing it wrong. We are trying so hard to convince others that they are wrong and we are right, that we are the ones drawing the dividing lines, drawing distinctions that keep others out and us in, drawing distinctions that keep others from God but push us farther away as well, drawing distinctions that the Spirit has called us not to draw. We think when we draw these lines that they are a straight line, that it's simply a line that I draw that separates me from you. But that's not how the line is drawn. The line is drawn in a circle and just cuts me off. Where would we be, you and I, us Gentiles, if Peter had not listened to God? If Peter had not stepped across the very lines that they had been drawing and reached out with the love of Christ? Where would we be if Peter had not decided to follow the Spirit and erase the distinctions holding him back from sharing the good news with all of God's creation? Where would we be if those distinctions had stood? What distinctions are we using to separate, to divide, to draw lines? Who are we separating out, and who are we closing in, and why are we trying to hinder God in this way? We cast our dispersions, our distinctions at the others, the thems, the Muslims and the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Sikhs, the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Catholics, the gays and the lesbians, the transgendered and the transsexual, the liberals and the conservatives and the Democrats and the Republicans, the Cardinals fans, the Raiders fans. We draw our lines and think that we are drawing a line that will somehow hinder God, that will somehow keep God out. What group do we think God wouldn't want to be in? What group do we think God isn't already in? What place do we think is off limits to the Creator of the universe? What distinction do we think will hinder the Alpha and the Omega? The time for drawing lines, divisions, distinctions is past. The time to strip across those lines we have drawn in the love and grace of Christ has come. To reach out to places that are strange to us, people that are different from us, situations that are foreign to us, and trust in the presence of the God that has led us there. When Peter did, when he laid down old divisions, human distinctions, and trusted in where God sent him, he changed the world. What will happen? What will happen when you quit dividing, quit drawing lines between us and them, and start crossing those lines, not as righteous conqueror, but as humble servant? Whose world will you change? It's a scary notion. It's not easy to leave our herd, to venture out where others are discussing four-barrel injected carburetors and overhead cams. By the way, for the full breadth of my car knowledge, I got that from Greece. That's where that came from. It's a scary notion to venture out where we might not know everything, might not be entirely comfortable, might not be in our element. How do we do it? How do we cross those lines that we have drawn? How do we step across old distinctions and divisions? John tells us, do it with love. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. By this, everyone will know. Not by how right you are, not by how indignant, not by how righteous, but by love. By this, everyone will know. Everyone everywhere will know. You are my disciples. Amen.